Please be seated. Thank you. Okay, we have one case on the 10:30 docket. See that both counsel are here and ready, so we'll call Rolando Bazane versus the State of Texas. Mr. Houghton?
Thank you, Your Honor. You know, this is fairly, to boil it down, and I really just am focusing on points one and two in our brief. But the essence in terms of point number one of what it is we're arguing there is that to include in the jury charge here both intentionally and then also to include knowingly when that's not part of one of the elements or part of the elemental findings that you need to have in the criminal case dilutes or eliminates, first of all, the requirement that this have a specific intent, and specifically intentionally. Certainly, if we're also including in the jury charge that the jury may find or that one of the findings possible is knowingly is a lesser standard, then we eliminate all the more significant standards in that case. And as we can see, the state in this case has agreed with us that that is, in fact, error to include that in the jury charge. So moving on past that then to what the proper standard should be for determining if there is, in fact, harm or what standard we should apply in determining whether there's harm or determining whether or not to reverse this case. And the state cites Alamanza and Drury to set out its standard. But, Your Honors, it's our contention here that that is not the appropriate standard under the circumstances. And that's because of the error in the case. Because by allowing the jury potentially to find that the act had to be committed only knowingly then, eliminated one of the essential elements of the offense. Drury, as I recall, was a case in which the issue in the case was sort of a collateral issue or an evidentiary issue related to instructions about a handwriting analysis or comparison. And it did not go to the actual elements of the case. And so the four points that the state argues would be necessary for the court to consider in determining harm in that case in Drury certainly wouldn't apply in this one. And we would direct the court to Sanchez, as we have done. And Sanchez was a case that's more appropriate to this sort of a finding in which there was an element omitted from the consideration for the jury. And in Sanchez, they found that they ultimately found that it was not the Drury standard that would apply there, but the standard was more of a fundamental error standard because they lacked that necessary element.
But here an element wasn't omitted, just an improper alternative one was included.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor.
Is that a distinction?
Well, the distinction, I don't know that there's a distinction, because if you provide an alternative to one of the elements, then necessarily you don't have to find that element. If you don't have to find, if you can find, for instance, that a person only commits an act knowingly rather than with a specific intent, as in this case, then you've really omitted the requirement to find that specific intent. And you've really omitted then that one element without actually saying you don't have to find this, just by giving them an alternative. One of the other difficulties with that, certainly in this case, is that number two, then the jury could have been split as to whether they found that he committed the offense knowingly or did he commit it with specific intent to arouse or gratify his own sexual desires or the sexual desires of another. And so the problems that arise from providing an alternative within the jury instructions are significant because they do create a situation in which you don't know whether the jury, number one, found beyond a reasonable doubt all of the elements of the offense, or number two, whether the jury was split as to their finding on that intent element in this case. And so I don't know that there is a distinction between actually saying or actually omitting completely an element or providing unnecessarily an element that could replace or substitute for one of the other required elements. And certainly, in this case, having those words in the charge of the court would have created a real source of confusion for the jury. Because even though, and the state argues that everybody argued at trial that he had to find, you know, specific intent. Everybody argued at trial that was the proper standard. However, Your Honors, if it's in the jury charge, it still creates such a significant potential that the jury is going to take the charge as they should and follow the charge specifically when they get back to the jury room. And so, as we made reference in our appellate brief, you almost end up with a Smith problem there, in which the jury then says, okay, well, if you don't want to see, and in Smith, as we all recall, if the jury didn't want to have the defendant executed, then they could answer a question in a way that would get them there. It was a nullification instruction, essentially. That's kind of what we have here. If we're asking the jury to ignore something, a standard within the jury charge, and to find a different way, if we're relying on only the argument of counsel and the court's, and I don't recall if the court made a specific instruction orally to the jury that they had to find the specific intent over and against a knowing finding, but you're asking the jury then to essentially ignore one part of the written instructions that they have in front of them when they go back into jury chambers. And that's certainly a situation that in Smith, even though it's a different kind of a problem, it still sort of presents the same difficulty at trial, and that is of asking a jury not to follow the court's charge. And so the problems with this kind of error are significant. One of the other difficulties that we have in this case is that this was a sort of error that had already been considered by this court on a Denton County case. And I'm not sure, I'm going to butcher the name of this case, but it's Chiodo versus State. It's a 2007 case. I think the opinion came out in July of 2007. This case was, Mr. Bazzani's case was tried in October of 2007. And in Chiodo, this court found that was in fact error, but then this court applied that standard, that separate standard, the one I've just argued against, that it was harmless error. My argument to the court today is that certainly if the state knew it was error to put it in at that time, and they certainly had notice from this court that using that instruction at trial was error, then it certainly would behoove the court to certainly find that they had, it's harmful to them, and it's a more substantial harm analysis when the state knowingly uses an instruction that has been found to be in error, as it did in this case.
But there's really no evidence of knowingly that they knowingly used it. It could just be a form left on a computer. There's not evidence of intent by the state.
That is absolutely true that no specific person actually had knowledge when they did it. However, when this decision came out in July of 2007, certainly the Denton County District Attorney's Office was on notice because it was their case. And so they certainly had an obligation to correct even their proposed jury instructions that they would have set out and made sure that the instructions that they were providing as a proposed instruction to the court was appropriate and in compliance with what the findings of the court on appeal. And certainly that close in time with another case coming up. So I certainly cannot go around and point to anybody and say, you knew and you should have done it different. But institutionally, certainly, the office knew, and the office had notice of it. And so I think they are certainly held to a higher standard than under the circumstances to make sure that these charges are correct. Now, as to our argument in point number two, it's a similar argument it's a little bit different, and in that in the same charge, they instructed the jury, and they combined the two means by which a person could commit this particular crime, and that is by intentionally touching a child under the age of 17, not the spouse of the defendant, and then, on the contrary, by causing the child to touch them also. And that was our second point of error that we discussed here. And, Your Honors, our argument there is that by combining the two, essentially boiling them down to saying sexual contact is any contact between these folks, to a summary of what that contact is, also caused Mr. Bazzani's harm, especially as it relates to count number three, but perhaps to counts one and two. The evidence then would have shown that, could have shown only that he touched the child, not that the child was then caused to touch him. But the jury, again, wasn't instructed specifically as to what constitutes that contact, whether it also included the child touching him or him touching the child. So the jury could have used the same evidence that it used to find him guilty in counts one and two to find him guilty of count three. In other words, the jury charge didn't instruct specifically as to what all those elements were in that case also. So by combining the two, that they just really have confused the issue as to what the elements were and what the jury was to have found. Because count number three, if, in fact, the evidence showed that only that he touched the child, then he's not committed the offense set out in count number three. And so they should have had those elements in the charge of the court, at the trial and instructions to the jury. And, Your Honors, I think that's all I've got on those two points. And if there are any questions.
Well, I'll go ahead and ask you what I was going to ask you on rebuttal. You made a comment about the state having been on notice that this court had ruled in the Odo case on this issue that that's a factor we should consider in determining whether there's harmless error in the Almanza standard. And I just was noting that the Chiodo was an unpublished opinion, and I was checking the rule to see what type of precedential value an unpublished criminal case has, and I don't think it has much, if any. So how you want to respond to that?
It was also, I believe the Chiodo case was also made reference to in another case, and I believe it's Rodriguez. I don't have that right in front of me in my notes. I believe it was Rodriguez, and I think we set that out in our reply brief, that it had been cited otherwise.
Well, Corpus, yes, is the Rodriguez case.
And yes, I believe that's
cited Rodriguez in the unpublished opinion of this court. So. Okay.
And I certainly understand that. And the only reason I would argue that is because if the court is using the Almanza factors, the four factors to consider harm in this case, then certainly under number four, which says anything, other factors, it's kind of a generalized other factors. I think it actually says other factors in the record. But it seems to be a very generalized fourth category of things that this court can consider. And so I only provide that to the court if the court determines that the Almanza factors are the appropriate factors to consider. But certainly my argument is that we should apply the standard set out in Sanchez, more rigid standard.
But counsel, does the Sanchez argument address the failure to object to the charge?
Well, in fact, in Sanchez, it was procedurally a very similar case because there was no objection at trial. And, in fact, the error in Sanchez was unassigned on appeal. So it's even worse than in our situation. And so Sanchez does more or less address that problem in our case.
I noticed that in the application paragraph, it says, with the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of said defendant, and then intentionally or knowingly. And so it seems like the intent that the jury is required to find the intent, whether the actual act is done intentionally or knowingly. Does that make sense?
It does. Certainly, to my mind, I can frame it that way. But, Your Honor, the problem that I still have with this is that when the jury sits down with the actual charge and they're looking at the charge of what do we have to find, with intent to arouse or gratify said defendant intentionally or knowingly engage in, it still leaves the possibility for the jury that they could find only knowingly that he engaged in this conduct knowingly. And so that still gives us the same problem there. We still have the same difficulty. And certainly confusion with the jury is, I think, is my time up?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lights
confusion off. With the jury is the same problem, whatever degree.
Thank you, Mr. Todd.
Thank you.
Mr. Orbison.
May it please the court, counsel. It would have been perfectly fine if the jury had found that he knowingly engaged in the contact, as long as the jury also found, as instructed, that he acted with intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desires, his own sexual desires. What the state did here, if anything, was add to its burden. Plain and simple. The jury was instructed to find specific intent that he acted to arouse his own sexual desires. Now, they added to that. So, if anything, we increased our burden. Now, I'm not going to really disagree with what opposing counsel about the state conceding it was error, because the brief kind of reads that way. I prefer to say it a little differently. The state concedes that the Corpus Christi court and this court, in an unpublished opinion, and the Jones court from Texas, the Texarkana court in Jones, have all seemed to agree that this type of charge produces error. If that unpublished opinion in Chiodo, and there's a fourth pronunciation, I guess, was not out there, I'm pretty sure I would not have written this brief in this way. I'm just acknowledging that even though it was an unpublished opinion, this court has held that was error. What has happened here is the state increased its burden. Also, that's how the offense was charged.
Well, since Chiodo has no precedential value, what would be your position?
My position would be the state simply alleged more than it had to. Now, so that if the jury charge did not continue with what the indictment stated, the claim on appeal would be, well, the state had surplus in there that it had to prove, and it didn't instruct the jury that it had to prove that. So it would have been a different appellate argument, but one nonetheless. Now, whether it is actual error...
Would you want us, this panel, to follow Chiodo or to the rationale and apply it in a published decision which would have precedential value? Is that what you're suggesting?
It might make it might be of greater assistance to the Second District if that happened, and here's why I say that. First of all, Chiodo was a different court, different prosecutors, different data clerks, different everything, okay? The second problem we have with this, and I know this is not the court's interest, but since we're trying to use Chiodo as an egregious harm analysis, I feel like I can say this. What prosecutors all over the state face is the charging manual they follow, put out by TDCAA, says charge this offense this way. And they just came out with a new edition. It goes from 2009 to 2011. It says charge it this way. So it might be helpful as we work with that organization to say, well, not only do we have Corpus in a published opinion saying that's error, but here's Fort Worth also in a published opinion saying that's error. The Jones case out of Texarkana doesn't quite go, it kind of gives a left-handed acknowledgement that there might be some error there. But truly what we have here is alleging, if we have anything wrong, we have alleging too much, and it's really comes down to that simple. But this court, I'm sure, understands that we did not eliminate an essential element of the offense in this indictment or in this jury charge. They were simply extra. And I think the only way to read it is the way that Justice Walker read it, and that is that the jury would have had to first find there were specific intent to arouse or gratify, and then if they were going to follow the charge to the letter, they had to find additional mens rea that perhaps the statute doesn't require. So I have no problem if they found that he knowingly engaged in the conduct, as long as they found the specific intent as to he did it with a specific intent to arouse his sexual desires.
Well, do you think that this charge is error?
If the charge is error, then the indictment is an error. And, of course, there was no objection to the indictment. But I think you're trying to go beyond the technical argument here. Is the indictment error? I don't really know, I guess. I believe the reason that prosecutors all over the state are instructed to charge it this way is because of the law that exists out there that says where there's not a specific mens rea as to that conduct, we add it in, I'm assuming. I don't really know. But to me, in addressing the issues in this particular appeal, it was enough for me to just simply acknowledge that the Corpus Christi court has found it to be error, and this court has, albeit in an unpublished opinion, has favorably cited that opinion. And then the Texarkana court, little less strongly, also favorably cited that opinion. So in terms of this particular appeal, that's about as far as I went. But I think there is a bigger issue here, whether it's error or not. And
so what's your answer to Justice Walker's question?
the answer, Justice Walker, is I really don't know because I haven't delved that deeply into it. Here, let's just all assume it's error. For right now, he doesn't get there because there was certainly not egregious harm demonstrated. Now, the argument that Almanza doesn't apply, I think, it is clear that Almanza is the standard that applies, and all the progeny that thereafter. Sanchez, well, it is true that the Court of Appeals in Sanchez did not consider all the four factors that courts of appeal typically cite. But here's what the Court of Criminal Appeals did with that. It said, we note the Court of Appeals didn't look at all the factors. So here we go. On our own review of this, we find that the Court of Appeals is right, but we're also considering the conflicts in the evidence, state of the evidence, and the arguments that counsel made. That's any other he's talking about? He wants to bring up a different case entirely? That's how we, in the Court of Criminal Appeals, applied the correct standard. And so this is at least tacit, if not direct, support for the notion that the Court of Appeals, although they got the right answer, did it wrong. But this is not Sanchez. Sanchez, there truly was elements missing in the jury charge. Here, there was no element missing in the jury charge. It's not procedurally the same. So definitely, Justice Walker, there are forms on computers. And definitely, if you go and look at the most recent charging manual, it's going to say charge it this way. And I think that's a problem for the state as we go forward and what to do in this particular situation. As to the second issue, state would simply note that opposing counsel's assertions are incorrect in the state's opinion. And that is the language that was included in the abstract portion of the jury charge in the state's way of thinking could include both a person touching a child and a person causing a child to touch the person. There was some economy of language there that I can understand how opposing counsel doesn't agree with, but that was covered in the abstract portion of the charge in the state's opinion. But even if we assume the worst again and say it wasn't covered in the abstract portion of the charge, then clearly there was not egregious harm here. The application paragraph directly told the jury what it had to find. And there are, as you, this court well knows, a number of cases that say where the application paragraph is directly on point with what they have to find, a minor problem in the abstract will not suffice to show egregious harm. So clearly on the harm analysis, even if this court disagrees that there was no error there, clearly on the harm analysis, the appellant can't show egregious harm. If there are no further questions, those are the two issues that appellant addressed, and the state would pray you affirm the conviction below.
Thank you, Mr. Orbison. Mr. Hott?
Very briefly, Your Honors, the one thing that I did want to address is that to say that they are adding to their burden on jury instructions, I don't think can carry the day. They don't get a pass simply because they add things to an instruction that shouldn't be there in the first place, because you do have difficulty, the difficulty for the jury of there being confusion as to which standard applies. You know, what's the mens rea requirement in here? If you put a lower mens rea requirement, even though it's in addition to something else you may have there, then you certainly give the jury a means by which they can say, well, this is what the charge says, knowingly engage in sexual contact. And so I think certainly just by including it, you have at best diluted the requirement of specific intent, and perhaps you have eliminated it altogether, and thereby denying the appellant in this case the right to have each and every element considered by the jury and found beyond a reasonable doubt. And thank you. I think that's all I have, unless you all have additional questions.
I have a question. So you're saying that you don't think that you can commit the offense of sexual contact if, with the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of said defendant, he knowingly engages in sexual contact, blah, blah, blah.
Well, because, Your Honor, it's also knowingly is defined within the charge, and it's defined at a lower standard than with that specific intent requirement. So the jury certainly could be misled into believing that that is the appropriate standard that needs to be applied, and because it proximately sets there with the language of his, you know, engaging in sexual contact, then I think it does create the same problem there. And it's, again, you just can't say we've added something that shouldn't be there, and so we get a pass. It still creates the problem. It still puts in front of the jury an alternative that they could take, even though they could read it. They're not lawyers. They're not trained to read these things as lawyers would read them. And so they're at a disadvantage when they hear all this argument, and they're told at the beginning of the trial, argument is not evidence, okay? They hear what the judge says, they hear what the lawyers say, but then they have the written document in front of them, and that's what they're told is to control their deliberations. And so that's what they're left with. And when you put that alternative in there, you really have created a significant problem for the defendant, and you've taken away his due process in that trial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Houghton. Mr. Orbison, we appreciate your time and your helpful arguments this morning. We have no other cases, so we'll ask clerk to adjourn us. Thank you.